Welcome to Alchemist X Innovators Inside, the podcast where we explore the world of corporate innovation and dive deep into the minds of thought leaders, high achievers, and risk takers. I'm your host, Ian Bergman, and together we'll uncover the challenges, triumphs, and secrets behind successful innovation journeys. Whether you're an aspiring entrepreneur, an industry veteran, or simply curious about the ever-evolving landscape of innovative ideas and what it takes to put them into practice, this is the podcast for you. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and let's embark on this exciting journey together. Jeffrey, thank you for joining us today. And for all of our listeners, I could not be happier than to welcome Jeffrey DeWalker to the show. Jeffrey leads technology strategy and new market innovations at Cummins, a leading engines and power generation company, and is right there in the middle of a transforming industry as he focuses on everything from decarbonization to new ventures to other advanced technologies. Jeffrey's also a startup mentor, an engineer, and an enthusiastic supporter of innovation in the corporate environment. So Jeffrey, I am so happy to have you join us today. Welcome.
Glad to be here, Ian.
It's going to be fun. Welcome to Innovators Inside. I would love to get to know you a little bit more and have the audience get to know you a little bit more. Can you tell us just a little bit about your personal story? You started as an engineer and researcher. Now you find yourself working on new innovations in a whole new markets. How did you get there?
I've always been interested in creating new things and tinkering with new things or playing around with things. So that's where I started off with as an engineer. And I started off in the R&D team, developing new things for Cummins back in 2011 after my master's, where I worked on emissions reduction technologies. So right, I was working on new things, new ideas on how we can reduce emissions further. And while working through that, I got interested in learning about how these technologies that we are developing are actually going to the market, to the hands of the customer. And that's one side of the equation. The other side is how do we as a company or as an individual make a decision on which ones we want to take forward and how do we bring that forward, right?
There's always too much to work on, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I was interested in strategy in general. So I reached out to our executive director of corporate strategy here at Cummins, and I got a part-time stint back in 2013. To take on a strategy project. And doing that, I realized I don't have all the skills to do a proper business strategy. So then I started my MBA at Chicago Booth, got some of the skill sets that I needed. And then I moved back to corporate strategy, took on a couple of roles there. But then still, my core interest has been on innovation, on the growth opportunities for companies and startups. So I came back to focus on innovation and growth strategy for Cummins. Did that for a few years. And then eventually our R&D organization had to transform as part of the overall thing that's going on in the industry. It's a transforming industry right now. So we wanted to focus more on the exploratory aspect, right? So at that point in time, I was looking at R&D strategy overall, looking at programs and so on. But then once we wanted to focus heavily on exploratory strategy, we want a dedicated effort on that. So that's when I took up this opportunity that I am on, where I lead exploratory evaluations for R&D, Cummins R&D division.
Amazing. So let's talk a little bit about what that means. And I'm also going to note something you said, right, which is that you found something you were interested in and you had to reach out to management and say, hey, I want to do this. We're going to come back to that later because I think that's such a common but also important story in corporate innovation, right? Like who actually has the motivation to be the driving force? Yep. So what does this mean? What is your day-to-day? Can you tell our listeners a little bit more about what you're working on now and what you're trying to achieve?
So I'll talk about the industry in general and then talk about my role specifically. We are in the energy powertrain industry, right? Cummins is the biggest powertrain manufacturer. And right now we are switching from diesel-based solutions to potentially zero-emission solutions in the future, right?
Sure. You guys burn a lot of dinosaurs right now and create a lot of power that way.
Yes. Yes, we do. And we are switching, right? So early on, we were just a diesel engine manufacturer. Now we have everything from diesel all the way to all electric, hydrogen powered solutions and so on. So my role now, what I'm trying to do is figure out what opportunities exist for us Cummins, in terms of where we are at now. We are moving from diesel to, in the commercial side, maybe hybrids, right? But then in the longer run, we will be moving to electrification and for certain applications and hydrogen for certain applications. But in the interim, there's a huge gap, right? What are the different solutions? Are there different types of fuels? What are the solutions around that? That's one aspect. The other aspect is the infrastructure side, right? When we talk about long-term solutions, we're talking about hydrogen infrastructure and electrification infrastructure. What do we need to build those? There are very interesting technologies around all of those aspects. So those are the things I'm chasing down and trying to figure out which ones should we be investing our money and efforts in, and how do we go about that? Who we should partner with and go about it?
It makes total sense. I mean, you know, one of the things that we often talk about and we hear in this world of like innovating inside large corporations, right? Or we ask this question of like, where do you get the ideas? Where do you get the areas you need to focus on? Because as you said, you've talked about macro changes in your industry and Cummins has to respond, right? And Cummins has to remain a leader in the industry. But where do you get it? And so you have your own experience, you have the jobs you have to do, and then you have this understanding of the art of what's possible,
right?
So how do you stay connected? How do you stay connected to what's possible and then bring that back into Cummins?
That's a very important point, right? How do we get to know what's possible and what's out there, right? So there are a few aspects to it. As part of our R&D group ourselves, we are very closely connected with academia and research entities. So what's on the cutting edge of technologies that are coming up, we are very close to that, right? So the...
Sure. Like even the stuff that's in the lab or is on paper in a theoretical kind of research paper.
Yeah. And we sponsor many of those research activities in many universities. So we are very close to those cutting edge aspects. So that's one side. On the other side, on the commercial side, if you think about large customers and what they are facing, what problems they're facing, about 50% of my effort goes into that. Going and speaking with large customers and trying to understand where their pain points are and where solutions could help them, newer solutions could help them. That's one side. And then the third piece is startups, right? Startups and newer innovative companies and organizations. We have a specific group that works with the external startups. They evaluate them and they send them my way if there is a startup of interest. And then we try to see, we don't invest in startups. We rarely do. We invested in one last year. But we partner with startups. Not only startups, even larger companies, to test out and try out different technologies and solutions. So those are some of the ways we identify, come up with sources, right? Sources of those ideas for different solutions that we are going after.
That's awesome. And that makes sense. I mean, I think one of the key challenges from a lot of the enterprise innovators that I talk to is staying connected to the flow of ideas coming out of startup ecosystems and being able to parse them apart and prioritize them, right? Because startup entrepreneurs are an optimistic bunch. They should be. They're working on crazy hard challenges. And if they've been lucky, skilled, and planful enough to raise funding and capital, right, they're investing against these challenges. But most of them aren't going to pan out. So, you know, let's focus on startups for a second. What does that look like for you in terms of ingesting these ideas, in terms of thinking through, are they viable? Is there a viable partnership? Like, how do you think about that?
Yeah. So if you think about partnerships, it needs to tie up with our existing strategy in any of those domains. If it's a newer idea, does it line up with any of our existing strategies you are trying to execute. And if that lines up pretty well, then the question is, where are they at in terms of their capabilities and developments and so on? And what is the gap that they need to fill, right? Is there something that we can help out if we are partnering with them and bridge that gap and take them forward, right? So that's where typically many of the startups that I am in working with fall into play, right? Where we already have a picture of strategic view on certain things. Then we identify and say, okay, this startup looks good and they're interested in partnering with us. How do we partner with them? In terms of the newer opportunities, right, where the startups, and then we get a lot of inbound saying, hey, we have this idea. Are you guys interested in it? And if those are not things that we have currently looked at, it goes through a separate process. That is not purely on just the partnership aspect, right? We need to make a case for a strategy for us to get into something like that in the future.
Of course. And therein lies one of these tensions, right, around innovating in partnership with startups, right? It doesn't matter how many resources you have. You can't focus everywhere. You have to pick and choose. And that means a certain amount of process and evaluation. And you have startups that I imagine are just like, let's go, yeah, right? You have all the money in the world. Why can't we partner? Do you run into that issue?
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the things that the team who looks at startup partnerships does is they have identified specific accelerators and folks like that to filter those opportunities right away before coming to us with specific needs that we provide and say, hey, these are things that we would look for. If you can filter them, then send them to us. So that's the first step, right? Even in the intake phase, we get some sort of filtering that helps. But even then, you get like 100 different companies you want to look at in a month, right? And you have only limited resources to take a look at those, right? So that's where what I spoke about earlier comes into play. If it ties up with the existing strategic view that we have, that goes into that bucket, so it goes into a different stream, that's easier and faster route. The next bucket that we haven't looked at, that is much more time consuming and you need to spend a lot of time. So the more advanced in the development stage the startup is at, it's helpful. We know that they're closer to market, closer to commercialization, or closer to revenue. Sometimes they even have revenue. Sometimes we even look at big companies like Meritor. We just acquired Meritor, right? That's a huge company. So those are things that we take a look at, and those will be helpful for those kind of startups, right? If they are closer to market and they've shown that even from a technology readiness standpoint, they're at a high TRLs, technology readiness levels, then that helps push them through.
I'm a startup nerd, so I dig in on the startup aspect of this, but corporate innovation is so much more, right? So let's back up a bit. And can you tell me a little bit about is there an innovation that you can talk about, something that you guys have done within Cummins that you can sort of share with the world that you're particularly proud of at this point?
So the early 2000s, late like 2005, 2006 timeframe, US was moving into heavier emissions reduction in the transportation sector, right? So at that time, Cummins, Caterpillar, and Detroit Diesel were three big players on the on-highway market, truck market. So if you see the big trucks running on the road, one of those three engines will be in there. And then Cummins pioneered something called SCR, Selective Catalyst Reduction Technology. So we invested in that very heavily, in catalysis and chemical engineering, to dig really deep into SCR technologies and everything that goes with it. So there is particulate filter and so on.
Yep. So moving way beyond sort of the physical infrastructure of the engine into the chemistry,
yes,
how the actual fuel is processed, et cetera, et cetera. I don't know what I'm talking about, but basically into how it goes boom and makes power, right?
Yes. So how it makes power, moving from that to how do we take what comes out of the engine and make it cleaner? Right.
Yep.
So there is chemistry behind it. So there was heavy investment in those new technologies there. Right. Some of the other companies specifically our biggest rival at that point, was not as nimble. Eventually what happened is we were able to certify earlier on, and we were able to beat those requirements that were set with much more reduction than what was needed at that point. And we won out that market. So the other competitor had to get out of the market.
Amazing. Well, and you know what I love about this story? It doesn't matter that it's a few years old, right? It makes a really important point that I think our listeners understand, but a lot of people really need to internalize, right? Innovation is not just about like crazy new ideas that no one has thought of before, right? It is about being responsive and staying ahead of the curve to the demands of the market. And it's how you maintain your competitive edge.
Yeah, there are two types of innovation. Like Christensen says, sustainable innovation, and there is disruptive innovation. I differ in how he defines disruptive innovation, but sustainable innovation is the one that the one I mentioned is a perfect example of. And how do we improve from where we are at, keep improving on that market? Now, disruptive innovation, Christensen takes a low-cost approach, right? Low-cost is just one of those disruptive innovations. There are many different types of disruptive innovations.
I completely agree. And I will say that I think that sustaining innovation is underappreciated in the corporate innovation market often, right? We want the big flashy stories, but that's not the 99% of what's happening are not the really big flashy changes. It's the deliberate investments in new technologies, new ideas, et cetera, responding to where you believe the market's going to be in 1 year, 3 years, 5 years. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. It helps us stay competitive and stay ahead of our competition, right?
So here's the really fun question about innovation. Well, a really fun question. There's a lot of them. I think we're both on the same page. It's important. You stay competitive. You stay ahead of the market. It's, in fact, critical. The world's changing fast. So it's obvious. Everybody should be investing in innovation, right? It's not that easy. In your experience, you know, what makes it hard? What makes it hard to drive innovation, both in absolute terms, but also within an environment like Cummins?
In general, the biggest roadblock for getting into any of those innovative solutions or trying them out is funding, as everybody is aware of, right? Even in startups, it's the funding side. So, like I mentioned, right, there are two types of innovation, sustainable innovation and disruptive innovation. In the sustainable innovation side, it's a little bit easier because you can justify, hey, you have a product now in 2027. If you want to continue to sell the product in a competitive way, you probably better invest in newer technologies and newer solutions around that.
Sure.
Right. So that goes on in a fairly smoother way. Like in Cummins, we have something called product preceding technology. It's a program that runs 6 years ahead of when the product is supposed to be launched.
Amazing.
So it does some research and development work around it. So that's how we sustain that innovation on those newer, on the existing product lines. Newer product lines, that gets a lot trickier, right? My job primarily is around that, looking at newer opportunities. That's why in my title it says New Market Innovations. It gets really tricky on how we get funding. So especially in markets like where we are at right now, where our budget is a little bit constrained across the board, we need to be very selective on how we approach and what opportunities we really want to chase down, right? So the key there was, like I mentioned when I started off, right? What is the business strategy for us and how does that make sense for us as a company, right? We look at profitability primarily, right? So how does it look like from a profitability standpoint if we get into this newer opportunity? And then dig a little deeper and say, when does it make an impact for us, right? Can we delay it by a year and we will not be impacted significantly? Or do we need to invest right now, right? So those are some of the questions we face when we go and say, hey, we want to invest in this new program or a new solution.
Right, to build the case, to drive conviction internally. Yes. Yeah, okay.
The business case, right? The business case is the key. And it is challenging. We are always going to be competing against different opportunities that we need to prioritize, right? And that's partly what I look at as well. When opportunities come my way, which ones should we be prioritizing over which? How do we do that, right? So these are some of the metrics we use to roughly guide us in prioritizing opportunities.
Well, it makes sense. And you know, one of these things that you're hitting on, it's really interesting. When I talk to everyone from early stage startup founders or to the crazy independent mad scientists, the people with the ideas, the inventors, whoever, one of these questions that constantly comes up is, hey, I've got this great idea. I want to drive it. But, you know, what if the big incumbent comes in and builds it first? Mm-hmm. I think the point that you're making is that one, you know, the incumbent can't focus everywhere all at once. The incumbent is constrained by resources, right? And the incumbent, if they're doing things intelligently and if they're thinking planfully, like you are, the incumbent is defining their areas of prioritization and then saying, come talk to us, right? Come talk to us about partnerships. We have distribution, we have capital, we have customers, we have need, whatever it is, right? And I think that's something that a lot of people in sort of the entrepreneurial ecosystem don't always understand. They think, oh man, Jeffries can just assign a team of 12 engineers and build this thing.
No, we are heavily constrained. And for incumbents, the challenge is we are held to our goals, our immediate goals for our customers and shareholders primarily, right? We need to provide returns to our shareholders in a reasonable time frame. So with that in mind, the focus would be on the current product line and the immediate products that are coming up next, rather than real long-term views. So there are two things. Right? One is the partnership side. And the other thing is, think of it as areas that you're exploring, which the incumbents cannot currently spend resources on. And eventually, the incumbents could be the exit opportunity for you, right?
That's some good advice. Do you hear that? You hear that? Jeffrey's opening up his checkbook.
No, we are very selective on who we invest in, but we acquire firms, right? So if there's a real strategic fit in terms of our growth in the future, we do acquire those entities. So it's not just Cummins. If you think about larger firms across the board, that's very common.
Well, and I think that is, I was, you know, being a little glib there, but I think that is actually really insightful in that it speaks to the idea that if you can on the outside take on some of that sort of high risk, early ideation, prototyping, you name it, and you find yourself a certain amount of traction, there is going to be a potential for a strategic acquirer. There's going to be a potential for a strategic partnership. There's going to be lots of paths to getting your innovation into market in partnership with other organizations. And I think maybe folks don't always realize how much work you, your peers, your team at Cummins and other organizations do to enable that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you more of a personal question, if it's okay.
Yep, absolutely.
You deal with a lot of ideas. You deal with a lot of potential new markets. What is your process for developing conviction in something? Not just the business case, but that emotional conviction where you can go to the board, to the executive team and say, we have to do this.
Right. That's a very tricky question, actually, right? So we can make business cases for many of these things, right? But some of those come from experience in that domain, right? If you have worked in that domain, in that area, and you see something and you realize, okay, this is something that fills a gap right where there's a need, that is really, really a big boost for that kind of an idea. So that's one of the areas one of the areas that is easy to build conviction in, if you have experience in it. The other is, again, like I mentioned in the beginning, speaking to customers and identifying their pain points, right? And you see clearly how a specific solution is meeting that needs of the customers, right? And that helps you build that conviction for you.
Get out of the ivory tower. Talk to people. Listen.
Absolutely. Yep, absolutely. That's one of the big changes I've been pushing here, and we have made those in the recent years, is to go and talk to customers and do demonstrations, learn and refine everything that you build, learn more, and then you can build better products.
It's the innovation method. It's the scientific method. It's the lean startup method. It's such a, it sounds so simple, but it's so important, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Customer feedback is critical. Yeah.
I can tell you, I remember a moment. I'm not going to name the job I was in, but I remember a moment. It was about 7 years ago working at a big multinational where I realized that I hadn't talked to a customer in like 5 months. And I remember this moment. I was actually talking to my boss about something and I just kind of sat back and I went, oh, wait a second. Right. And I remember it because it was so shocking, but it's such an easy trap to fall into.
It's actually very common, right?
Yeah.
It's more common than not. So even when I started off in my older role as an engineer, I rarely spoke to customers, end customers. I was speaking to internal stakeholders, but not external customers, right? So that is changing now, slowly, but in the right way. But that's often the case, right, where you are pigeonholed into specific things you're working on, and you miss the broader picture and try to focus on what is given to you rather than what should be done, right? Customer voices and the interactions with customers are critical.
I completely agree. And I think there's such an opportunity for innovation-focused roles within multinationals, right? To not just kind of be that beacon on how to do this and not just practice it, but to almost be a role model, right? Grow the culture. Like we talk about growth mindset, there's lots of labels for this, but drive a culture of listening and learning through these conversations and attempts, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And again, you need to keep your mind open to your point, right? Because oftentimes opportunities may come up in areas that you're not currently focusing on. Right? And those would be really huge opportunities, right? We have been looking at, for example, if you take just Cummins as an example, like I mentioned, we did diesel engines, right? Now we have all offerings all the way to zero emissions vehicles. And now we are moving into infrastructure, right? So all these new opportunities come up that way. Just keep your mind open.
Then you keep your mind open. Absolutely. Keep your mind open. And you see that, you know, maybe you're reframing your business a little bit, right? Like, it sounds like you've been rethinking, like, okay, we're not a diesel engine manufacturing company. We are a, you know, insert whatever you would put here.
Yes. Yeah, we were a powertrain provider. In 2011, that's the shift we did from diesel to powertrains. Now we are an overall energy solutions provider.
So there's a lot of people out there that I talk to, and I'm sure you do as well, who gripe about how hard it is to drive innovation in whatever context, whether they work for a large company, whether they're kind of sitting on their HOA board, whatever it might be. What advice and encouragement would you give to folks like this who are out there thinking, I know how to do this better, or I want to do this better?
It is tough, right? It is tough in a sense that if you are looking at 100% hit rate in this kind of an environment, you're going to fail, right? So going in, if you set your expectation that, hey, you're in a high risk, high reward, potentially high reward environment, where the hit rate is really low, and you're willing to take that risk, going in, if you go with that mindset, makes your life a little bit easier, right? And when you pitch it, right, pitch your opportunity or ideas that come your way, it's the same mindset, right? You are taking a risk on whatever you're looking at. If you're pitching, you're pitching something that's risky to someone who's going to be evaluating it. Right? And that someone is trying to see out of 10 different ones, which ones do I want to pick? So you will face these times when you'll not be successful in getting those things through, right? But going in that with that mindset makes it much more easier. I probably pitch business cases or business ideas every other week to my senior management, right? And I probably get 2 to 3 through every 2 quarters, right?
Yep. which sounds pretty good.
Yeah. So if you go in with that mindset, it's not stressful. But if you think about, okay, I'm pitching this many, I want to get this many. If you have a metrics like that, it can get really stressful.
Got it. Yeah. So that high risk mindset where you know that only a some are going to get through,
right,
that conviction in what you believe in, and the pitching. You've said the word pitching a few times, but it is so important to,
yes,
to pitch, to, yeah, to put yourself in the shoes of the people on the other side, right? Think about how they're going to be hearing what you're saying, and
yes,
and pitch and sell.
Yep. And you should pitch to the right people as well, right? So it's common across even for a company like us. We have different business units looking at different areas, right? So who do you pitch your idea and which business leader you want to approach for funding and support? It depends on what you're pitching, right? Same thing goes for startups, right?
Whose life are you going to make better?
Yes. Which venture firm do you want to work with?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
All right. So before we got talking, you were actually telling me that you are an early adopter of a pretty cool piece of tech that is actually now going down into a little bit of the, I don't know if we call it Hall of Fame or history books, but you're a Google Glass lover. Is that right?
That is right. I was an early adopter of Google Glass. I actually got two of them, two pairs. I still use them. I still use my Google Glasses wherever I travel.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead. Tell us how you use them today. Because I got to tell you, I haven't seen a Google Glass in the wild in a number of years now. So when did you last use it?
Last week. I was traveling to Yellowstone National Park. I went to Grand Teton as well. While driving, I have them on. And I'm on these longer drives and so on. So anything I see that's interesting, I want to capture through a video, or just a picture, where I don't have time to set up my GoPro, things like that. It's much more convenient. So I carry them along on my vacations most of the time.
Well, that's really cool. And it's, you know, I can see that use case when you're in places as stunning as those parks. They're some of those beautiful parts of the world.
Yep.
Let's bring that back to Cummins a little. Augmented reality, mixed reality, virtual, extended, whatever label you want to use, it's been hot for a while, and I think it's going through a particular moment right now. I think we're recording this about an hour or two after Apple has made their foray into the space. Let's make this real in the context of innovation at a company like Cummins, because I think a lot of people are going to have trouble connecting the dots between something like the glasses and, you know, power generation, drivetrain generation, energy systems. Can you sort of connect the dots on why paying attention to a space like that matters for a company like Cummins, in addition to your personal interest?
Yeah, it's very, very, very important. Because a big portion of our operations, company's operations, is in service.
Sure. Repairs, maintenance.
Yeah, maintenance and service, right? Repairs and so on. So when you look at maintenance and repair, there are two things there. One is the maintenance technicians themselves, if they have guidance. So early on, we used to have huge kind of folders, a large set of folders to troubleshoot any issue, right? Then we moved on into codes, where you have codes and say, hey, these are the different codes. Now we can troubleshoot based on what code comes up. Then we moved on into troubleshooting trees and said, okay, now we have the code plus the troubleshooting trees. And we made it all online at that stage. Now we are moving into a place where people can see what the issue is and say, okay, now whatever we are wearing can guide you through what parts and things you want to change and so on. So it's useful for maintenance in that aspect, and it's also useful for the same technicians when they're being trained. Right? In training, you want to teach them about all the different components, all the different things that are there, and how do you remove them, how do you change them. So these augmented realities and mixed realities headsets have been extremely useful in that area. And in COVID, it was very useful in another area as well, in remote assistance.
Of course, you couldn't actually get on site.
Exactly. people could see them remotely through those augmented, I think it was virtual reality headsets, and they could point to where things are. So this is on the maintenance and service side. On the marketing side, it's always useful there as well, right? So think of, we are going to a big expo, right? And we have our own stalls everywhere. Think of a customer coming to Cummins facility here and who puts on a virtual headset and they can see an expo right in front of them, right? So those are solutions we keep a track of. Yeah.
And this isn't science fiction. This is technology that is deployed by Cummins today.
Yes. They are actively being deployed right now. Yeah.
So let's talk about one other hot space here. That's AI. AI is having its own moment for very good reason. Generative imagery and text creation, guidance, code creation, you name it. It's pretty hot. There's also a lot of speculation. A lot of people maybe are operating a few steps ahead of what the technology is capable today in terms of thinking about, you know, how it's going to change the world. How do you look at what's going on in AI, what's been going on over the last year or so in relation to Cummins, both as a business, but also as a business with like real hardware engineering that takes years to put in place?
So AI is just a transformation from, so we had machine learning and it's just one form of it, right? Cummins has always been data focused, and our engineering depends on many of these modeling and estimators and so on, right? Which used heavy amounts of data. So we had physical modeling and we had regression based modeling as well, right?
Sure.
AI is the extension of those regression based modeling going to a much better and highly sophisticated ways as well. So from one view, it's just a transformation from where we were at, and it's a continuum from where we are at and where we are at now and where things would be in that domain, right? In how we think of it from a technical aspect. From a technology standpoint, how do we use those AI-driven solutions? It's just a continuum. Now, the other side, where in the recent years, there have been some major developments on AI, especially generative AI, like you mentioned, which makes life a little bit easier on many of these, like especially on codes, writing codes. Mm-hmm. Right? You can just say whatever you want to get, and it can give you a Python code. You can just plug it in, and you're
good
to
go. It actually works, right? Most of the time.
You need to be a little bit careful, but yes.
Yeah.
So that has made life a little bit easier in simpler tasks, right? So if you want to do like minimum coding and things, you can just feed it in there and get those things out. We are a little bit careful about how we use AI in terms of sending our proprietary data and using that to generate solutions, right? So that is done in-house. We have an actual business unit called Cummins Digital Organization that has a huge AI unit in there. And they actually work on a lot of these newer AI solutions for Cummins. But think of it as even from an offering point of view, from a service offering point of view, Cummins has Cummins Tech and Cummins Solutions, where I forgot the name that comes that missing my mind, but we provide tools for who is operating our Cummins engines and Cummins vehicles or solutions that we are providing. How do they identify if there's something wrong before something goes wrong, right? Prognostics, right? We use some of those AI techniques over there.
Often. So you can do predictive maintenance. It's just, you know, just like with the human body, it's best to detect it early.
Exactly. So we used to have diagnostics in the past. Like I mentioned, it's a continuum from my view, right? We used to have diagnostics in the past where we identified when things were about to go wrong, and we were able to see that clearly, we would call that, hey, this is going to go wrong. Now we have, with AI and other tools that we have in our back pocket, we have prognostics and predictive maintenance coming in. Right? So yeah, so we are actively looking at these advanced technologies, and AI is one of them. And it's one of those tools that helps us.
That's really cool. And there's so much going on. It's almost impossible to keep track of. But hearing these stories of how it's deployed in the real world, right? This isn't science fiction. This isn't just people creating Shakespearean sonnets out of AI.
Right.
It's being used in the real world, I think, can be very inspiring.
Yeah, especially for areas where, coming from an engineering background, right? If you don't have a clear view of what that physical relationships are, meaning you can't write equations, AI is much more powerful than our random guesses. So those are areas where we rely heavily on machine learning and AI.
That's fascinating. Speaking about inspiring and fascinating, I just have kind of a question about your own journey. And that is, as you look back on your career to date, what are you most proud of? Is there a moment you can look back and you say, wow, I'm really glad I made that choice or I did that thing? Can you tell us about it?
So I'm very passionate about innovation and growth opportunities and newer things, always on the newer things, developing new things. I stuck to it. That is something that I'm very proud of. I was chasing after it. I was always trying to reach out to folks to learn what I can get into to build my own skill set towards where I need to be. So I always stuck to that. And even when opportunities came my way, which were completely different, I did not get in. And the reward that I got out of this is that I have a very unique experience and very unique skill set that I can deploy in Cummins. And in the role that I'm in, I can really push that to the limit.
Yeah.
Right? So that's thing that I'm very proud of, sticking to my own beliefs and my own passion.
I love that. I stuck with it is such like, it's such a thing that we should all be able to say. That's really good. Well, thank you for joining me, Jeffrey. This has been a fun conversation. Is there something else I should have asked you? Is there something else that's on your mind as we think about kind of the changing world of corporate innovation?
No, this has been fun, Ian. Just one point. I think you mentioned you wanted to get back on the how we should reach out for new opportunities.
Yes, absolutely.
In a corporate environment. Maybe you can cover that, which is it's important to your point, and I'm a big proponent of that, being someone who has done that and has really reaped the benefits of doing it. It's important for you to reach out to whoever it is that you're interested in learning from. Say you want to be a GM, general manager of a specific group or entity. Reach out to a GM and say, hey, I want to learn about it. Can we speak for 30 minutes? If there are stretch opportunities like 20% of my time, 10% of my time beyond my current role, it'll take a small project. Can I do it? Most likely, about 80% will say yes.
I'll say yes.
You just work with your manager. And so you will learn about that role and you learn what is needed. And then you can gain the skill set that's in there. Example, when I started my career, I wanted to be, after I learned about strategy, I wanted to be a general manager. And then I worked very closely with the general manager through my strategy project and figured out, oh, that's not something I really want to do.
Yep.
And I want to stay in the innovation side, right? So you learn those things. And I'm a big proponent of that. Even in my current role, I actually have 6 part-timers supporting different entities, different projects and so on. So I would advise people who are hesitant to think, okay, hey, that's completely out of my reach. It's not in my ballpark, but I'm interested. Just go ahead and reach out to folks in your company or somewhere outside. People are always willing to speak about it. And if you're offering your help, people are always going to say yes.
You know, that's such good advice. I mean, it's nerve-wracking, right? Because people might say no. But the flip side is, what's the worst case? They might say no. And more likely than not, people love teaching. People love sharing their experiences. And people definitely love free help.
Yeah. And most likely, like I said, 80% will say yes. Either 20%, they will not say absolutely no. What they'll say is they'll point to someone else and say, I cannot do this. Maybe this person can do it. Right?
That's really, really great advice. Get in that learner's mindset, reach out to the people who are doing the things you want to learn about and ask. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
I love that. I love that. This is advice that I wish I had been given early in my career. And I completely agree with you on giving it. So let's look forward a little bit. What do you think the future looks like for you personally, and even as you sort of look at the industry? Where are you focused over the next few years?
The industry is changing significantly, like I mentioned before, right? So I'm moving from, especially on the newer technologies that are coming up, electrification, hydrogen, and so on. So from my company point of view, like I mentioned, we transitioned from diesel to powertrains, now to energy, right? What in energy? You're looking at solutions, the vehicles and so on. You're also looking at infrastructure. So there's a huge change that's happening. And I'm glad I'm part of that at this stage, right? Looking out in the future, I'm going to stick to my guns, like I mentioned before, and focus on innovation and wherever that takes me, right? Wherever I get the opportunity. So I actually have a Venn diagram of things I'm interested in. One is advanced technologies. The other is growth strategy. Then you have investment management, right? So the combination of those three and is where I always want to be at. And I'm right there. So if in the future, I want to keep it there.
That's awesome. And it's something you can print out, you can put on your wall, and you can stare at it and say, hey, am I there? Well, so as you're on that journey, what's the best way for our listeners to follow you and your work? Are you on social media? How should they stay connected?
Yeah, the best way for reaching out to me personally is LinkedIn. You can find Jeffrey DeWalker there. The work we do, you can just look at comments. We release a lot of press releases often. You can learn about new things that are coming our way. Those will be only the public ones that are released. If you want to connect with me, LinkedIn is one. There is a new website called Pick My Brain. I just joined, so we'll see how that goes as well.
Okay, so I like this. A little cameo for Pick My Brain. You can reach out to Jeffrey Duakar there. That'll be fun.
Absolutely.
Well, Jeffrey, thank you so much for joining us on this conversation and this episode of Innovators Inside. It's been really interesting to hear what you're working on, and I wish you all the best luck in your future endeavors.
Thank you very much for having me. It was a pleasure.
So that's a wrap for today's episode of Alchemist X Innovators Inside. We hope you enjoyed the conversation. If you found value and insight in today's discussion, please be sure to subscribe to the podcast and never miss an episode. Don't forget to share with your friends, colleagues, or anyone who is passionate about corporate innovation or just curious about great ideas and practical insights. Until next time, I'm Ian Bergman. Thanks for tuning in.